Cam found out that group chats between different phones aren't private.
Or encrypted.
Or encrypted, thank you. We only text in code.
Yes, which I created. I created a code.
Yes. Which can be a little annoying.
Wait, was that your attempt at the code?
You already forgot the code, didn't you?
I should have written it down.
The place to safely send messages between different devices. WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome into 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman, and as always, I'm excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. Got a Q&A for you spanning a number of different topics. You guys really came through with a diversity of conversations. We'll see how many I can get to today, but there's a lot of great stuff here, and I want to get to as many as I can, so I might go a little bit more quickly through them. I hope that's all right with you. And before I start, I do have to let you know about our friends over at BetOnline, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to the online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today and get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, for 50% off your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. All right, let's get right to the first question that I got here. Comes in from Cooper. It says, after Kyle, Marquez, and Senza come back, who gets the other two spots in the rotation? And, you know, Bud Black has actually intimated that there's a possibility that Armand Marquez might be back even before the All-Star break, you know, in the offseason. And it's always one of those things that teams are very careful with giving us timetables and windows for returns, because sometimes you are doing your best guesswork, right? You never know exactly how people's bodies are going to respond to things. And so sometimes they feel like, you know, they say one thing and then something else happens, and you know, they tend to get hammered in the press for it, especially when a guy comes back later. Usually when it's earlier, not so much. But Marquez, it sounds like, might be closer than we thought. And Kyle Freeland is almost certainly going to pitch again here, you know, get back out there on some mounds. Now, it's going to be a minute before Seattle on a big league mound, because when you've had this much time off, you do need at least a couple of rehab starts. But still, we're going to see these guys. And that's pretty fun and exciting just from a big picture Rockies standpoint. Obviously, Marquez is on the verge of a couple of Rockies records, which is pretty fun, particularly with regards to strikeouts. But, you know, as I keep trying to remind everybody, and we'll get back into this with some of the other conversations, this is less about, you know, can these guys come in and save the season, and more about what do they have left in the tank and moving forward, with Freeland still under contract for another couple of years, with Marquez at least through next year. You know, how do they respond to these injuries? Because to Cooper's question, you know, right now the Rockies have two pitchers who are pitching very well, though their last couple of outings, and in fact somebody else asked, I might as well throw this question into this conversation because it's part of it. John asks, after missing a start and then not having a Gomber-like start last time out, should we be concerned about Gomber's arm health this season? He's having an amazing year, and I'm really pulling for him. Hate for the injury to derail it. And yeah, you know, that I would really hate for that too. It's one of those, another thing, I'm not a doctor, I wish I knew. Hopefully not, right? Because it's been one of, it's got to be a top three, top five best story for the Rockies this year, is seeing the way that Gomber threw a lot of difficulties in his time in Denver, a lot of, you know, frustrating narratives that kind of write themselves after the trade and everything like that, and some of his struggles, for him to really be having a phenomenal season this year. At one point you looked in and you could say he might be their all-star, right? And the last couple of times out, not quite as sharp, but I do think that, you know, I'm I'll be honest, man. I'm as objective as I can be about a lot of these things, but on a human level, you got to root for a guy like Austin Gomber, who's really, you know, gone through all of that, and then it looked like was coming out on the other side of it. And like John says, you just hate to see injury derail that at any point in time. That's the least fun thing about sports, is when injuries, you know, ruin a good story. And so that would be really upsetting. But I think he's going to be all right. You know, you got to hang in there and see a couple of starts and see how he bounces back. It's a tough team to pitch to. So we'll see how it goes. But ultimately, assuming there isn't some elongated injury or a bigger issue there that we don't know about, Gomber and Quantrill have just been so dang solid pretty much all season for your Rockies. And then after that, there's been moments from Dakota Hudson, right? There's been moments from Ryan Feltner. That fifth spot has been a bit of a bugaboo. Now, Ty Block has done all right, but that's a guy who you expected to be a long reliever, you know, started the year in AAA. I like Ty a lot, but he's not someone who you know, would think of as being an anchor in your rotation. And so I think it's pretty easy to say, you know, now Senzatella is a little bit farther from coming back. And so I think you're more looking at these two guys, Marquez and Freeland, maybe probably looks like before the All-Star break coming back. And that is going to create an interesting decision, even though, like I said, it's not really about maximizing how many games you can win this year. In fact, Cindy's got a question about that here in a moment. But how are you planning this out for the future? So a certain traditional logic would say, you know, with Feltner's struggles, and you know, if you all have listened to me talk before, and I sent out a tweet yesterday during his difficult start, that I still believe that Ryan Feltner's best future for this team is as a reimagined reliever, because he's got great stuff. And when he just doesn't have to think too hard about sequencing or saving anything or any of that, when he can just go out and try to get swings and misses and get three outs, he can be very, very, very good. But when he starts game planning across innings, he tends to have these moments of innings that get to him. Or, you know, he had the 0-2 pitch, you know, one run game, two outs, couple runners on, a chance there to throw a few pitches in the dirt or a couple of the eyes, you know, waste a few, do something, get your swings and misses. And he throws a very hittable fastball, gives up a couple of runs. And then from there, the ball game just sort of got out of hand. And those are the kinds of things that I think, you know, he's attacking the zone a little bit too much in an 0-2 count, but it's because it's the, you know, earlier innings of the game. And so is he trying to save the big curveball or the big slider for where if he knows his night is over right here, he's got to get this guy out if he's in the bullpen and he's got two runners on, two outs. He almost certainly throws a curveball or a slider in the dirt or at the back foot or something there, because if the guy lays off and he has to throw another couple of pitches, oh well, he's not worried about his pitch count getting out of hand, right? And so, yeah, I ultimately think that that's the case, but I don't think that that means that you move Feltner to the bullpen immediately. I still do think you've got to give him, with this season likely being one where you're going to lose a certain number of games, and that's almost a good thing in a way. We're going to get to Cindy's question. It's okay to let him continue to try to figure it out just in case he does, because he'll be more valuable to your team even if all of your prospect pitchers hit and Freeland and Marquez return and they're good too. Still having Feltner as a depth guy, because we all know injuries happen, all these guys coming back from injuries, right? It would still be better to have him as a depth piece in the rotation, possibly. At least moving forward through this year, you want him in the rotation, I think, because you just want him getting as many reps, pitching as many innings as possible. He's already stretched out, so okay. But if the math is such that, you know, you haven't really been able to move Dakota Hudson at the deadline or whatever, maybe, you know, you want to just stick with him because he's an innings eater and I don't think he serves out of the rotation, and maybe you want to get a head start on that. Maybe for the future, you really do think that Feltner could be not just like a guy who's better in the bullpen, but I really do think he could be a great setup guy, maybe even a closer if he really takes to it, because he's got great swing and miss stuff. And right now, the Rockies' future in the bullpen is super full of question marks, right? I think there's an opportunity for him to win an important job out there, but to reimagine himself. You know, we talk about change of scenery sometimes when guys get traded, but this would be more like a change of scenery without him having to leave the roster, without you having to lose a potentially pretty valuable arm, and just put him in a spot which will be better for him and better for you. So I think ultimately, you know, that's something that'll happen next year, and they'll probably stick with Feltner, Quantrill, you know, Marquez and Freeland will be there, and, you know, maybe you stick with Ty Block or no, Dakota Hudson would be there at that point. You can move Ty Block back into the bullpen. So, as I alluded to a couple times during that question, Cindy asked, are we going to win too many games that it keeps us out of contention for an upper seed draft pick? So this is great, right? Normally, I shouldn't say normally, in a theoretical, hypothetical, no, I've covered a few years where the Rockies were in the race, especially early there were times, you know, you might be looking at some standings, or this would be about the first time you go, okay, it's we can start looking at the standings now. Well, now we're going, okay, it's just to the point where we can start looking at the reverse standings here, right? Now, I know not everyone loves this, and a lot of folks, especially with this much season left, would just prefer to root for some wins, and especially because the Rockies have been playing better lately. As I've often said, then, this is a very, like, tightrope to walk to Cindy's question, because I think, one, you do need to have stretches where the team plays well, wins some ball games. That feeling of success for young players, you can't, like, I do think losing 125 games, being historically, you know, tragically bad, where everyone in baseball is clowning on you and all of the media, just all the red meat for the people that want to tear into the team, like, that I think would be bad. And that was happening for a minute there, right? And it was on the verge of really going in a terrible spot. But now they've played much better baseball of late. That said, they're still second in the reverse standings. Now, in case you're confused by that, they are well ahead of the Chicago White Sox in terms of games. The Chicago White Sox have still only won 15 baseball games this year to your Colorado Rockies 21. However, the Chicago White Sox, because of the new rules regarding like market size and how many previous lotteries you've been in and revenue sharing, the new CBA, they are actually not eligible to pick in the top 10. And this is also true of the Oakland Athletics, who actually right now do have a better record than the Rockies. Not by a ton, but yeah. So the only team who actually sits behind the Rockies in the lottery right now is Miami. Now remember, at this point, the top two teams both have the same odds. So being in second place is the same thing as being in first place. And it's a 22.45% chance of getting the number one overall draft pick. That doesn't drop off too heavily if you move up or down, depending on which way you're looking at it. And the Los Angeles Angels, who are only a half a game better than the Rockies with one more win but the same number of losses, that gives you an 18% chance at the number one overall draft pick. Not a huge drop-off from 22, but then there's a much bigger drop-off from third to fourth place in the reverse standings, where it goes from 18% to 10%, which is where the New York Mets, ha-ha, LOL, the New York Mets currently sit. And so, yeah, there's a certain amount of winning to not be miserable that they can get away with if your ultimate goal is still having the best odds or among the best odds at the number one overall draft pick. And I'll even say this, it's often the case, and this varies from draft to draft, but it's been true the last several years, that there's the top three or four draft picks and then a bit of a drop-off after that. As we've seen with the Rockies getting Chase Dolander last year, right? You can get extraordinary talent at that number three pick. In fact, number three, it has historically been a pretty good spot. Recent history is where they got John Gray. You know, like I mentioned with Dolander, it's going to be interesting to see what they do this season. Please, Chase Burns. Look him up if you haven't yet. YouTube, Chase Burns. But So yeah, I think, you know, you're looking at a situation there where the Rockies can continue to win some games here and there so as to, one, make it so that you, the people who are watching them on a regular basis, get to enjoy some of these games, right? Get a couple W's at the end of the night. And so that the players, the young players, can be rewarded with better play and a little bit of success. They don't need to be historically terrible in order to get a good draft pick, I guess is what I'm saying. And so I think that that's still the area we're in. You know, I think this stretch of the last three or four games that we've seen, they've lost three in a row as I'm recording this now, got smashed by the Reds in the opener there. And I think some of that goes to show, again, the ups and downs that this team is just going to experience. But you should enjoy those ups and not worry that they're, you know, quote, ruining the draft positioning or any of that too much, because I still think it's likely that the Rockies end up in that bottom three or four and still with a high chance to get that pick. And if anything, like, history has shown that the draft lottery will do weird things anyway, and I think that's a good thing, that it does disincentivize full-on tanking, because you could come in, you could have the sixth or seventh worst record in the league, and yeah, your odds are only 5 or 3% at that point of getting the top pick, but maybe you end up with pick 2 or 3. And, you know, you end up with a player that, because number one, you know, as guys, for example, this year, the general consensus seems to be there's incredible position players that are going to go 1 and 2. And I really want the Rockies to take this pitcher, Chase Burns, number 3. So the fact that they don't have number 1 overall actually means nothing to me as long as Chase Burns isn't taken with the first or second pick. Because to me, he should be number 1 on the Rockies draft board, right? So sometimes getting pick 3 or 4 is also okay. Now, I haven't looked forward to next year's draft yet because my brain can't think that far in advance anymore. But yeah, I think you're okay in terms of the reverse standings. But I do love that question. Colby asks, when do you think we start to see movement with prospects in the minors? Dolander, Sullivan seem like they should be in Double A already. Palmquist probably in Albuquerque. Any shot we see the first two with the Rockies this year? Didn't Feltner have a similar path when he got called up? All right. This is two different topics, Colby, that I get to dive into now. So thank you for this question. And I may have to end on this one and get to the rest in a next one. Actually, I got at least one more I've got to get to that kind of two people asked. But Colby, to this question, I think it's starting to come. I think it's going to start happening soon. You know, I think the Rockies have wisely, and these two topics do tie into each other, have wisely taken a slower approach with... Slower is the wrong word, because Bill Schmidt has actually very aggressively moved certain guys through the minors, but he hasn't skipped levels. He, you know, and especially when guys get hurt or are having a downtime, he's perfectly fine pumping on the brakes and letting them work through it. Another guy I could have thrown into this conversation, I think somebody asked down here about Zach Veen as well. But then he hasn't played in a week. Now he's having some back issues. He's been incredible this year. So you do have to be careful with those things. When it comes to pitchers in particular, I am of the belief that you got to send these guys to Albuquerque. Now I'll admit, I might have a little bit of PTSD from things like, even going back to like Juan Nicasio, Eddie Butler. You know, there's a school of thought that says, you shouldn't send these guys to AAA because you get beat up in Albuquerque. The PCL is going to beat you up no matter how good you are. Go back and look at John Gray's numbers when he was pitching for Albuquerque, or Kyle Freeland, or Jeff Hoffman, though, you know, it was a whole complicated conversation to have there. But it's a tough place to pitch. But guess what? So is Denver. And in Denver, you're doing it against big leaguers. So some people think you shouldn't like destroy a guy's confidence by sending him out there and letting the small ballparks and dry air and huge winds of the PCL, that where every ballpark is an offensive park. Like, you know, imagine every park being like Coors, but smaller. and they all play super offensive. And yeah, it crushes your ERA and your whip and your FIP and all those things. But I think it also teaches you incredibly valuable lessons about how to pitch through adversity, how to deal with nonsense, how to deal with feeling like you made your pitch and yet you gave up a hit, sometimes a home run, so, you know, sometimes a broken bat, double down the line, whatever it is, because when you get to Denver, that's going to happen. You know, other places, maybe not as much. It's not going to happen in San Diego. You know, with all that foul territory in Oakland, you can get away with a lot more stuff. But in Denver, you just can't. And so for me, and again, this also goes back to the conversation of recognizing where you are as an organization. If I thought there was a chance, and this was the case with both Juan Nicasio and Eddie Butler, where both of those teams, the big league teams, the years those guys were dealing in the minors, kind of sort of maybe felt like they were on the cusp, right? And they were playing above their heads a little bit. And so those seasons probably felt better than this one does right now with all of these losses. But I would argue, and many people have over the years, and to be frank, I was oftentimes on the other side of this argument, that that was a smokescreen, that that was ultimately bad for the team because it convinced them they were better than they were. So they didn't trade off their veterans to get better prospects, right? They didn't do some of the things to build for the future the way they have been now and the way we hope they're going to continue to through this trade deadline. That's why some of these losses, as much as they're tough to take, again, might be ultimately a good thing. Because what ended up happening those years is they call up Eddie Butler because they're a 500 team halfway through the year, and they've got this kid in Double-A who's got like a 190 ERA. I don't know exactly what it was, but you know, he was absolutely dealing. And they had a difficulty in their rotation. Hello, it's the Colorado Rockies. Of course, there was one spot in the rotation that could be bolstered. And there was, of course, you would think, well, you'd throw one guy on there. If he comes up and he just starts dealing, maybe they make a surprise run into the postseason. But of course, he comes up. It's too early. He hasn't been exposed. He's never really experienced failure because all throughout the minors, he had just been unhittable. And he gets to the bigs, and now he's experiencing failure for the first time on a big stage, on a team where there was a not, you know, secret of a hope that he might help them get to the postseason early. And all that pressure and all that, who knows what that ultimately did to Eddie Butler's career. And there's another school of thought that says, hey, if you're a great pitcher, if you're mentally tough, you get over those things anyway, you come back and you figure it out. But for me, that's another one of the silver linings of the fact that the Rockies are in second place in the reverse standings and, you know, are having so many losses this season, is that you don't need to rush Carson Palmquist or Sean Sullivan or Chase Dolander up to the bigs. You don't need them to come here and save your season. Look, folks, the season's not going to be saved. And it doesn't need to be. It shouldn't be. However, you can start to move them up. And with Dolander and Sullivan, it's still early enough that I would say give them half a season there. Let them really sink into it and then move them up. With Palmquist, I'm ready to see him in AAA. I'm ready. I do think with him, he's somebody who I would really like to see in the big leagues by the end of the year, probably later in the year. But still, I do think that can help to start build his confidence and build momentum toward the future if you can debut the first of those guys. But I don't think we should see Dolander or Sullivan this season unless both are just absolutely lights out through the whole year. And maybe it's an inning cup of coffee out of the bullpen as part of September call-ups, which aren't as big as they used to be. And there's just not as many roster spots as there used to be either. But there shouldn't be a situation like with those other guys I was talking about where, say, if somebody gets hurt, all of a sudden you're just like, well, heck, let's try Dolander. Like, no. That's not fair to him. Slow and easy, but then you start looking to accelerate, I think, next year. And like I said, one last question, or at least one last topic, two questions from two folks. Blake asks, when do you think the Rockies will be good again? And Tovar Season asks, what is a realistic timeline for the Rockies to get back into the postseason? And I want to note, I do think these are two slightly different questions. The answer to the first one from Blake is, I think the Rockies will be good again next year. I really do. Now, how do we define that? Closer to 500, maybe falling just short, maybe being just over, being in that situation where you could be a bit of good luck and a second half run away from sneaking into the now expanded postseason. I believe this because, again, I think there's just an extraordinary wealth of position player talent, and there is now some pitching talent, as we've talked about throughout this show, right? From Gomber and Quantrill, who, you know, maybe could keep this going for a little while, to the return of guys like Freeland and Marquez, to the promotions ultimately of Palmquist, Dolander, Sullivan, and of course, Chase Burns. I'm going to keep banging on that door. But I do think that, yeah, they're going to be better next season. I think it's, you need to hit on all of that pitching for next season to be a postseason year. I do think 2026 and beyond, though, is really where, very legitimately, that window will start to open up. Obviously, there's a lot that can happen in the, you know, two seasons or season and a half, I guess, between now and then. Injuries are always a factor. Guys just absolutely not panning out at all. How you'd have, if you roll snake eyes on every single one of your prospects, that certainly delays or diminishes the possibility for that window. But again, I feel like I've seen this movie before. I was just alluding to that time frame earlier. And yeah, it didn't work out for Eddie Butler, ultimately. And it didn't work out for Juan Nicasio. And those were big, you know, sad, frustrating, difficult things to get over as prospect hounds and people who were watching that team grow and evolve during that time when, for a lot of us, it was clear they were going to get better. And some of those guys were the reasons and they didn't pan out. John Gray did. Kyle Freeland did. And Armand Marquez did. And to varying extents throughout that time of contribution, you know, Ryan McMahon, David Dahl, Raimel Tapia, obviously Trevor Story was the one, which is funny because of all of the prospects I just named, Trevor Story was the guy, he was like rated ninth among that group behind McMahon, Dahl, Gray, Freeland, Tapia, right? Story was like in ninth or tenth. Tom Murphy, part of that group, remember him? And so I see a lot of that now. And even looking at a guy like Jordan Beck, who hasn't gotten as much ink as Zach Veen, Drew Romo, Adiel Amador, Yankiel Fernandez, right? But Beck may be the Trevor Story of this class of guys where it's like he gets here a little bit earlier than some of them. Now, Nolan Jones, you know, Ezekiel Tovar, Brenton Doyle, what are the comps there? I've often compared, you know, Charlie Blackmon, Nolan Arenado, DJ LeMahieu. Those were the types of guys you had coming up early and starting to form a core before the team got good. The team had all of those players on it. The Coors Shield, you guys remember those days? The infield was Nolan Arenado, Troy Tulowitzki, DJ LeMahieu, Justin Morneau. Your outfield of like Michael Kadire and Dexter Fowler and like those guys would go, those veterans would move on, right? And be replaced by younger players. But the pitching that came up through the system that ultimately led to back-to-back postseason runs. Of course, the problem there was they made almost no moves to bolster that team and then allowed it to completely fall apart. So you don't want to do that again. But as far as the building, as far as putting those building blocks together and creating a window of contention, this is very similar. And so, you know, obviously it's still, it all comes down. They're not robots. They're not mirrors of each other. They're not their statistics on a page. They're all human beings. And it's going to pan out however it pans out. If it turns out that Chase Dolander is as good as John Gray was for this team, that's going to go a long way toward making them competitive. If it turns out he's even better than that, it's going to go a long way toward dramatically increasing the opportunity for a window there, right? And on down the line with those pitchers. But yeah, I do think it's coming. I know it can be frustrating to watch all of this unfold, but as we were talking about earlier, sometimes there's the silver lining there is that you don't end up rushing prospects up to try to win a few more games this year, because ultimately winning a few more games this year doesn't help you that much in the long term. You can turn around a pretty decent collection of veterans who are playing well right now. Elias Diaz, Jacob Stallings, Jalen Beeks. We've talked before about the complications with regards to guys like Ryan McMahon and Brendan Rodgers, but still there are opportunities there if they are, you know, the Dexter Fowlers and Michael Kadires of Justin Morneau, those guys who aren't going to be, who were fun to watch, who were great players, but ultimately weren't a part of the next good Rockies team. And instead of, like a lot of those guys I just mentioned back in the day, instead of losing them for nothing or due to injury, general free agency, whatever, if you can turn those guys into prospects who help fill out the depth of your roster, then you can do better than you did in 17 and 18 with the youth movement. And that ultimately should be the goal here, is not just to be able to build similarly to how they've done before, where, yeah, they're 500 next year. That's close to your, 2016 type of season. And then, boom, boom, back-to-back postseason years. But to be better than that, not just a team that can get into the postseason, but can really build some depth out here and be good for 5 or 6 years and actually be in postseason contention for most of a 6 or 7 year window. And that, I think, is a possibility, but obviously, we're a long way away from that. So at this point, good next year, postseason contention the year after. A lot of things have to fall in place, though. They have to stay committed to the rebuild. They've got to hit on these prospects. And I do think, conversely, they can't turn into an historically terrible team this year. They've got to keep their heads above water a little bit, play some good baseball here and there, especially once, Nolan Jones, Kyle Freeland, and Armand Marquez all come back. So thank you all for listening into this. I did get several other questions, but I totally lied about going through them quicker. I just wanted to dive into this stuff. There's a great one on here about the 2020 draft that I want to talk about, and a few other things. So we'll do that on the next one. Thank you for listening into this episode of 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I hope that you will continue to be absolutely awesome out there. I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a 4-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Do you know about all the musical genres that were created by Black musicians? Like jazz, rock and roll, and folk music, to name a few. This Black Music Month, State Farm is celebrating the cultural impact and influence of music created and inspired by Black innovators. Next time you're enjoying a song, trace it back to its origins and see for yourself. Check out the Black Music Forever station on Pandora, brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.